This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
In studio. With
oh, so
today.
Stephen A. Russell wasn't a guest.
He never counts. He's too much of a regular. But we have someone who's related to what Stephen was already talking about, actually. Katie Somerville is here and is the Senior Curator of Fashion and Textiles at NGV and will be chatting to us about the Alexander McQueen Mind, Mythos, Muse exhibition, which is highly anticipated and I've heard amazing things about.
Now, you couldn't make it the media launch the other day.
No, and I was so regretful. I was up very early on a bus going to a music festival and it was nowhere near as glamorous. But thank you for joining us, Katie. How are you?
My pleasure. It's great to be here.
And so, Katie, before we start talking about the exhibition, it's always really great for our listeners to hear a little bit about who we're talking to. Could you tell everyone about how you got into the role you're in now and where it all began?
Yeah, of course. It's actually particularly fitting, I think, with this exhibition as the topic of the day, because I actually started as a baby curator, as I like to say, back in 1995 at the NGV. So by then I'd done my arts degree, had worked for a number of museums, done postgrad museum studies and was kind of wistfully hoping for my dream job, and there it was, an advertisement for first ever baby curator for the fashion department at the NGV came up, and I duly applied and delightedly got the role. And the reason I guess that's particularly significant in relation to the exhibition we're talking about today is that it was only 1 year later, in 1996, that the NGV first acquired Lee McQueen's work. So we've been collecting now for over a quarter of a century, and I've been sort of sat tight throughout that period. So yeah. It really is kind of the culmination. It's that classic thing of what we do as curators, it's a long game.
It's a long game, yeah. And we, the general public, aren't aware that, you know, how long has this exhibition been in the making? 3 or 4 years?
Yeah. Well, look, our fantastic colleagues, two curators who originated the exhibition at LACMA, the Los Angeles County Museum of Art. They were working on it for a couple of years before they approached us. They kind of, in the process of their research, they'd realised we had one of the best collections of McQueen in the world, as do they. So
how did it come about the NGV has got this collection?
Two reasons. I think starting early is important because then you get, I mean, at that point, those first three works we acquired were from, you know, a collection at that time. So acquired in 96 and they were for collections that season and the season coming. And then we sort of built up over the next few years, probably ended up with about 10 works that sort of stayed around that for a little while. And then thanks to an extraordinary philanthropist, made all the difference. And again, there's a nice kind of connection between us and the institution we partnered with, because the reason they dreamt up project on McQueen in the first place is that they had a major donor gift several hundred artworks, all fashion, from this woman's collection. Her name was Regina Dre Drucker from LA, and that collection was, as I like to see, you know, Azzedine Eye, the A to Z, Azzedine Eye to Zandra Rhodes, but at the heart of it was this big group of McQueen. So they really wanted to celebrate that. And hence spawned the idea of coming up with an exhibition off the back, of course, of the fact that several years earlier, the Met and, of course, the V&A have done significant sort of retrospective style exhibitions on Alexander McQueen's work. So it was about kind of how to do something different, how to sort of present this designer in a new way for audiences. So they presented their show at the start of this year. And then a couple of years ago, they approached us about sort of partnering to do sort of an upscale version, sort of twice the size of what was presented in LA for Melbourne audiences.
Just explain to people the importance of Alexander McQueen. Why is he got such a legacy? It's obvious when you go and see the work, because it's absolutely amazing. What is it about him?
Yeah, look, I think if I have to be really tough on myself and boil it down to two things, show some curatorial discipline, it's an incredible storyteller. Like he ultimately, he was an artist whose medium happened to be the wearable, but at all times when he was developing his collections, presenting his collections, coming up with ideas for how they were presented on the runway, it was about that compulsion to tell a story, and often not easy stories too. It wasn't all pretty wifty wafty. A lot of the time he was making quite strong political statements as well. And then the second thing I'd say is, I think in large part because of how he became a designer, his wasn't the classic story of a sort of a privileged secondary student who trots off to fashion school and has dreams of, you know, establishing their own label. You know, he left school very ordinary, humble East End family background. You know, mum was a teacher, dad a cab driver, left school mid-teens and took up an apprenticeship on Savile Row, which of course is it's the heart of traditional men's tailoring in the world, really, and has been for several hundred years. So I like to think of, you know, he did the hard yards. He did what is truly, you would say, is slow fashion, you know, learning one thing, learning it well, spending months before you progress onto the next thing. So his background was technical, and he also then spent time creating, working for a theatre costume company. So he understood the sort of technical how to build a garment, the tradition, and also the sort of history of, you know, different silhouettes changing over time and how to convey those through the garment. So by the time he was kind of short of a penny and trotted off to one of the leading fashion schools in London, Central St. Martin's, basically to try and get some job tutoring, you know. And when the head of school kind of saw his portfolio, she said, look, I'd really love it if you'd consider doing the MA instead. And luckily his aunt lent him the money, and that's how it started. And then within literally within a couple of years of finishing that MA, he'd, you know, really made such an impression that he got tapped to take over as the head designer at Givenchy in Paris too. Whoa. So for a period there, he was, you know, head of a couture house and kind of championing, you know, the way forward for important, innovative, radical fashion in Britain.
I mean, the outstanding part, apart from how beautifully it's presented, and congratulations to the NGV on that, is that tailoring. The tailoring is magnificent. You can stand there and look at one of the pieces and you go, gosh, that's so well made, and it's just so well, you know, like it would have been such a treat for a person to have worn it.
Yeah, and I think you've encapsulated so well what this opportunity is with this exhibition, is that, you know, you can see all the footage and magazine, you know, spreads in the world, but it's when you're stood in front of, we've got 120 works by Alexander McQueen, combination of our collection and LACMA, supported by about 80 artworks. So we're kind of really looking also at all the different myriad varied influences, whether it's kind of geographical, historical, art historical, popular culture, film, that all fed into these amazing ideas that he expressed through clothes. But yeah, as you say, you know, one of the big sections is just called Technique and Innovation, and that's where there's no bells and whistles. We're really just letting these incredible pieces stand for themselves. And many of them, are made from effectively men's tailoring fabrics, but it's the way they're cut and constructed that is just mind-blowing.
He's Scottish, obviously, with a name like that. And the lovely story is that his tartan, his family tartan, is used a lot in pieces that's in the exhibition, which is a really nice touch, isn't it, that he used that in his work?
Yeah, I think, you know, when I say he's an incredible storyteller, sometimes those stories are complete concoctions, you know, literal fairy tales that he's drawn from his amazing imagination. Other times they're actually deeply rooted in something quite personal, and his family background in relation to his Scottish heritage was one that he revisited several times. First of all, in a fairly controversial collection at the time from 1996 called Highland Rape, and people misconstrued the use of the word rape in that context, but he was actually making a very strong political point about the brutality of the British clearances in the Jacobite uprisings.
Shocking.
Yeah, so And again, he does that again in 2006 with a very beautiful moving collection called Widows of Culloden. And in the exhibition, we've got 12 works from that collection, and five of them, as you say, have this extraordinary McQueen clan tartan.
And it's a beautiful tartan too, isn't it? It really is. So sometimes a tartan doesn't really stand out. Well, it's because of the colouring, but it's that red. The red really, you know, like hits you, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And the nice thing is one of the dresses that we've got in the tartan in that section is the one that an later version of it was actually the one that was worn by Sarah Jessica Parker when she accompanied McQueen on the runway at the Met Gala.
Yep.
And that was the same tartan, but it was printed rather than woven, and just even the different ways that he used that tartan. And we've even got, for that dress, which is extraordinary really, we've got the original toile, which of course the toile is kind of like the work in progress version of a dress that, as they're developing it in the studio. And typically toiles are made from really serviceable cotton calico. You know, no one wastes any money or time while they're figuring out their ideas. But apart from one collection, McQueen did all of his toiling in the actual fabric. So the expensive stuff, the 200, 300 pounds a metre stuff. So we've got the original toile for that dress, which interestingly was in a black taffeta with black lace. But somewhere along the line, it shifted and the tartan became the version.
Now, we were lucky enough to chat to him on the show last week, out of the blue, and it's these headpieces that accompany, and there's one tartan dress with the bagpipes on. Who's the designer?
Yeah, so you're talking about the fantastic artist Michael Schmidt. He's an LA-based artist who, I guess, a large part of his career has actually been creating extraordinary showpieces for performing artists, you know, who usually have one name, Beyoncé, Cher, you get the picture. And so he's, you know, used to working with all sorts of materials to create these really sort of spectacular pieces that have great presence. And so when LACMA first presented their exhibition in LA, they invited him to effectively take that idea of inspiration. If we're looking at the artworks that helped inspire McQueen, we then look at what can be inspired in someone else in looking at McQueen's work. So Michael worked very respectfully, not kind of copying or mimicking anything McQueen did, but really taking references and inspiration from McQueen's work and McQueen's messaging and translating it into these extraordinary sculptural headpieces.
And there's another one in particular with a headpiece is beautifully tailored a jacket. I think it's almost like a dress with a bit of a nautical feel to it. You know where I'm going
here. Yes.
And there's a sailing ship, the tall ship on the model's head, which is a magnificent piece as well. But again, when you look deeper, the tailoring of that is it a dress or is it a jacket?
It's I can understand your confusion in a way, because it's cut in such a way. It is actually a coat. It's almost like a tail coat, but it's sort of asymmetrical. It's actually cut in one piece of fabric. Like technically, if you look at it long enough, the mind boggles. But it's a really early piece from a collection called the Dante Collection. And I think, you know, Michael was so clever, because it does have a military feel to it. You know, there's the gold braid and it's very kind of masculine tailoring, which, of course, a lot of what he learnt on Savile Row, you know, yes, you're making businessmen's suits, but a lot of what happens on Savile Row is actually military formal dress as well. So all of that influence coming through. So just perfect that Michael Schmidt chose to create this extraordinary kind of crystalline sail ship for the top of the head, which is proving to be one of the most popular headpieces in the show. A lot of
I've seen so many photos of it on social media. But then, apart from all the magnificent tailoring, and it's early in the piece, are these beautiful evening dresses, and they're in the creams and whites. They are just magnificent. They almost take your breath away. They're just so beautiful. And you think to yourself, you're going to see pieces like this in an exhibition, but you know, like, they're outstanding, aren't they?
No, I think you're probably talking about the works from the Neptune collection, and they're like Grecian goddesses, the way they're draped, the colour palette. Even when McQueen chose models when he presented that collection, he chose women who are all 6 foot tall. So yep. he wanted that sense of these kind of Amazonian fabulous women kind of striding down the runway. But all the artworks we've pulled into that space that speak to these themes are about classicism, neoclassicism, you know, mythology, Neptune, you know, and all those motifs are drawn out in his work. And I think that kind of delicacy, that light touch is something that people know less about with yep, the Queen. They're yep. certainly maybe aware of, you know, the Bumsters and the tailoring and the more sort of radical moments. But let's not forget, you know, particularly after that time, I think 5 or so years heading up the Couture House, there he had the most expert people at his fingertips to execute everything in beadwork, embroidery, lovely light floaty fabric. Mm. So his skill level and his kind of capacity to make his dreams come true in the fabric sense mm. expanded at that point. And you can really see it. Mm. You know, there's another collection called Deliverance, which was based on the film They Shoot Horses, Don't They?, which is focuses on a 1930s dance marathon. And there you've got this wonderful kind of
very
allusion
floaty,
to sort of Hollywood, yeah. yeah, and beautiful bias cut, very pretty gown. Mm. So, yeah, it's that each collection, there's this really strong kind of idea that comes through and the sort of technique catches up beautifully.
Yeah. It's an exhibition you've got to see more than once. You can't take it in at one, which is often the case with an exhibition. But you stand there, you look, and yeah. then you've got to move on. You know, it's time to move on. Yeah, it's one that I think people are going to come back time and time again.
And I think we've got a whole section dedicated to the runway and behind the scenes of the runway too, with some amazing photography by British photographer Robert Farah. There's about 40 images. And this, I think, is
it's
really
a bit off-putting because yeah. you hear somebody with high heels walk and you think they're walking behind you, but it's the noise. It's very clever done there.
Yeah, no, you literally see the models having the haircut, yep. you know, hair done, I should say, makeup done. You can see the leftover takeaway containers, you know, where they've just finished having their lunch. There's a real sense of that palpable sort of energy backstage. And, you know, it was great. We had Robert Farah with us too recently for the opening of the show. And, you know, he said really in all his decades, he's become quite expert at the behind the scenes stuff. And the secret to his success was not getting kicked out, making sure that you're so yeah. sort of almost invisible, you know. Yeah. You can capture the moment, you can not be in anyone's face, and you can let things flow and you just document as you're there. So I think that section's really quite special, definitely.
Yeah. Yep. Well, congratulations. It's spectacular, people. I'm sure, you know, like the amount of people that just on social media that's it's been posting is extraordinary already, and it's only just started. You know, like, don't wait till the last minute, people. You don't want to be queuing up for hours. You know, book the tickets, get in there, because it's so good. It's so good. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you for having me.
No, pleasure. And it runs to the 14th of...
16th of April.
16th,
yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you both.
Thanks for joining us. We've been chatting with Katie Somerville, who is the Senior Curator of Fashion and Textiles at the NGV, about the Alexander McQueen exhibition, Mind, Mythos, Muse, which David said is happening till April 14th next year, but do get in quickly. And we'll be right back with you after these messages on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.